concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Today marks 76 days of flooding of the Moses Cemetery in Bethesda. The Bethesda African Cemetery Coalition recently confronted Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich at a press conference on the county's safety initiative. Today, we will get an update on that fight from BACC members. On July 29, 2022, the FBI, carrying assault weapons, conducted a violent pre-dawn raid on seven homes and offices of the Uhuru Movement and the Uhuru Three, including Chairman Omali Yeshitela, were indicted of conspiring to commit an offense against the United States. Chairman Omali Yeshitela is here today to speak boldly to the Uhuru Three's innocence of these charges by the United States government and the upcoming September 3rd, 2024 trial date. Stay tuned. Good morning and welcome to What's at Stake. I'm your host, Denise Young, filling in for Dr. Marsha Coleman out of Bayou. And we are with you the fourth Wednesday of each month. We have a packed show, and I know you will not want to miss a second of it. So starting out, we are going to be talking with members from the Bethesda African Cemetery Coalition, Ari Gutman and Robert Stubberfield. Welcome, Ari and Robert.
Thank you for having us, Denise.
Okay, before we even get into the conversation about what's happening with the flooding, one of the things I want to do is to set up, I want to share with our WPFW family the footage that was obtained from a recent press conference that Mark Elrich gave just a few weeks ago. Going to the clip.
When are you, when are you going to stop flooding Moses African Cemetery? I mean, how dare you talk about public safety when you're flooding an African burial ground? How dare? Yes, you are. Mark, stop lying to people.
I'd like to hear the county executive speak.
Yeah, I'm sure you would, but our ancestors are being flooded by this man. Well, I'm sorry. No, I'm not. I'm going to stand right here. No, this guy is a criminal. He's flooding an African burial ground, and he wants to talk about public safety. No, we can't talk. I'm going to stand right here. I have a right to stand right here. You can't tell me to be quiet. I have a right to speak. This guy is flooding an African burial ground. I'm not being disruptive. He's being disruptive. No. Why are you touching me? No. You're touching me. Stop touching me. No, you can't tell me to be quiet. This man is a criminal. He's flooding an African burial ground. 56 days now. He's flooding an African.
Please leave.
Wait a minute. You're touching me. You are touching me. Wait a minute. You are touching me. Stop touching me. Stop it. No, stop it. I'm glad I'm being recorded. I want to be recorded. That's why I came.
Okay. Is there an opportunity that I can talk?
No, I'm talking to Mark.
The voice that was heard is the voice of our very own Dr. Marsha Coleman Adebayo, who was at the press conference to protest again, as always, and as importantly, the desecration of Moses Cemetery. So beginning with you, Robert, first of all, have you, I know you've listened to the footage. Have you seen the footage?
Yeah, I saw the footage the same day it was released because it was live footage. Mm-hmm. And what gets me about the whole footage, there's several things. One is the fact that in addition to the fact that Mark Elridge is continuing to lie, despite the fact that we have word from the developers themselves that they admitted that they're flooding Moses Cemetery, well, part of Moses Cemetery, I should say, that they admit that they're flooding part of Moses Cemetery. But what gets me is the fact that you have police officers that are that tower above Dr. Marsha Coleman Adebayo, and they're armed to the teeth. Meanwhile, Marsha is about 5'5", maybe 140 pounds, dripping wet, and all she has in her hands is the banner of BACC. But apparently, that is the threat. You know, that's a big threat to these officials. And then the third thing I want to note is that this was done at a conference that essentially, a press conference that essentially expands the police state. You know, first it's drones with surveillance, but we know that drones can also eventually be armed with weapons. The question is, like in good old Montgomery County, what type of weapons are these drones going to be armed with first? Are they going to be armed with tasers, or are they going to be armed with Hellfire missiles next? And then the fourth thing is the fact that there are a lot of people, some of whom I recognize, who just stood there and let police, you know, push Marsha around and didn't do anything. And yet they're called, quote unquote, community leaders. And all I'm going to say is that if these are the so-called community leaders, then we're screwed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there, I want to follow your line of thought. But before we get to the specific conference, I really also want to make clear that our audience understands what we say by, I believe today is day 74 of mm-hmm. flooding. So yes. let's be sure that our family is clear about what we are talking about.
Okay, sure, absolutely. So let's rewind our clocks back to January of this year. What happened in January of this year was that we began noticing that there was a lot of water, you know, that was taking place on part of Moses Macedonia Cemetery, specifically where, and I hate using the word parcels, but I'm going to use it here, parcels 175 and 177. Now, of course, during January, we had snow, we had rain, but even with the volume of snow and rain that we did get, it wouldn't be enough to flood the cemetery. So we began going over to the site and we began noticing that there was a pipe that was going from 242, which we call Old Moses, and going into 175 and 177, that which we call New Moses, and they were pumping the water. And we were trying to figure out what's going on here, because the reason why the developers over in 242 haven't been able to lay down the foundation yet is because, like, you know, there's a lot of water, because that area used to be swampland and a known floodplain. So we were able to get a meeting with Delegate Corman back in March. And that's when Delegate Corman and his chief of staff informed us that the developers actually had a permit, which basically allowed them, where they basically admitted that, yes, they're dumping the water into 175 and 177, but it's not that big a deal because, in their words, they're treating the water before they disperse it. And so that's why. And so we've been petitioning, like, you know, the Department of Permitting Services, the Planning Board, et cetera, to one, do an investigation, and then to tell the developers to stop flooding the cemetery. And yet that the flooding still continues. And then about a week or two after the meeting with Delegate Corman, we had a meeting with Attorney General Brown, where our attorneys, Mr. Lieberman and Ms. Logan, to their credit, they cited three criminal statutes and two civil rights statutes that the Attorney General could have used to tell the developer, you know, stop flooding part of Moses Cemetery. And to my knowledge, the Attorney General said that he couldn't get involved with the case. And so this is where we are. We are now in day 74 of flooding of Moses Macedonius, a part of Moses Macedonia African Cemetery. And despite our outcries to local and state officials, the flooding still continues and an investigation has not been done into the developer.
Okay, and then just so we're clear, this is Attorney General Anthony Brown?
Yes, Anthony Brown. Yes, this Maryland State's Attorney General, right. Anthony yes. Brown. Yes.
Okay. All right. So we have this flooding, which we're talking about criminal charges. We're talking about an issue of morality. We are talking about potentially environmental concerns. We're talking, and I think this is where Marsha, Dr. Coleman Adebayo, was going when she talked about not feeling safe. It is also the erasure of a community. Can you speak to that?
Oh, absolutely. So in terms of the, let me start with the erasure of a community. You have to remember, cemeteries aren't just burial places for our dead. These are historical sites of remembrance. They tell us about what the community was like around the time when each of the people were buried here, who was buried here, and then within the African burial context, what were they buried alongside? Like, we have evidence that show that, there were tombstones that, as well as glass bottles, which for those who aren't familiar, though, or those who study African burial customs, glass bottles and glass beads have a spiritual significance as they were seen as mirrors to the spirit world. So we're seeing, like, you know, when there's a flooding, all of the artifacts that are there, in addition to the fact that it can cause bodies to rise up through the soil, you know, all of that gets destroyed and all that integrity gets destroyed as well. So trying to study the historical and archaeological findings becomes very difficult. But not only that, this continues into intentional flooding, I would say. I want to be very clear, intentional flooding, because like flooding, like when there's a lot of rain, it happens and it sucks. But intentional flooding is part of desecration. And for those who aren't familiar, desecration is considered not just a hate crime, it's considered per the UN a war crime and an act of genocide. And what Montgomery County is basically saying, and I really need our community to listen out here, they are basically saying we declare war on Black people. You know, if our cemeteries aren't respected, then in death, then they're dang sure not going to be respecting us in life. And we see that with the increase in police violence and the expansion of the police state here in Montgomery County. In fact, one of the things, and I want to just address the clip again a little bit, because one of the things that we tried to do is we tried to file a police report regarding the flooding. And we were told that we couldn't file a police report, only an incident report. And then we had Chief Jones literally say that he doesn't consider the flooding of a African-American cemetery to be a crime. And Chief Jones, who is considered to be the first African-American to be the police chief, I can't say I'm surprised he said that, but it still disgusts me that he said that. You know, like, how would you feel if your mom's cemetery was intentionally flooded to make way for a parking lot on a storage unit? You'd be singing a quite different tune. So why is it that when we have a historical community, especially when you, as the first African-American, you know, police chief, for you to say something so asinine is completely disgusting. And it just goes to show that Black faces in high places are not going to save us, because you have people like that who are part of the Blackness leadership class, which is contributing to, I feel, the struggle for Moses Macedonia African Cemetery, because you have some of us who would rather climb the political ladder instead of doing the right thing in terms of building a community.
So speaking of that, and I have to say, unfortunately, I was privy to when he said it, because I had arrived at the conference and walked up to Marsha at that point when that comment was made. But I want to this is related to the point that you were just speaking to, and that is this conversation about community folks being in the room. Now, when we listen to that tape and you hear Marsha, Dr. Coleman Adebayo, get rather quiet, and that is because she is And it's audio and video. So it is because the police officers have now approached her, and one is touching her. So that is what, and telling her that she has to be quiet, that she's being disruptive, and he's sort of touching her, trying to move her. And so I want to ask, and I was not in the room at when that happened, but I do want to get to this point of, as community members, as community advocates, when did this notion of having someone protest be considered disruption? Like, when did we start looking at that as community members, as something that we should shy away from, something that somehow should be, you know, held, or there are more appropriate ways to do things? If every single solitary thing that has ever happened in the vein of change has come because people have protested. People mm-hmm. have spoke loudly and courageously mm-hmm. and taken bold actions. So why are we now in an environment, particularly in Montgomery County, that considers itself so progressive that when you see a warrior like Dr. Coleman Adebayo, who is out there and saying, you should not do this, we will not accept it, why are people standing around watching and saying, please don't do that?
Well, let's start with the irony of the phrase progressive Montgomery County. And I say that's ironic in the sense, as someone who predominantly grew up here and went to school here, I want to be very clear here. Montgomery County is a southern town. You know, they just learned to hide their BS better. And I know some people will say, well, what about A, B, and C, you know, in terms of, like, let's say, talk about, like, the opening of the campus in East County, like, of Montgomery College, or the fact that you have Black representation on the council and whatnot. And I'm like, yeah, that may sound good on paper, but how does that stop police terrorism? How does that stop desecration? How does that stop gentrification, or as I like to call it, domestic imperialism, you know? Or renaming part of Randolph Road Josiah Henson Parkway. That's nice, but it's not, I mean, it's nice. It's a nice gesture, I'll admit, but it doesn't really get to the root or context of the problem. And in terms of the protesting isn't seen as ideal, it's a combination of lack of understanding. I mean, the willful lack of understanding history, let me be very clear, is the fact that people always talk about the proper channels for who? Because the proper channels may be working for you if you're part of the dominant overculture. But for people like us and our indigenous comrades, the only way we've been able to get something of our rights back is because we protested, because we fought back. And also tie into that, people forget we protested. There was the Boston Tea Party was a protest. The rum smuggling was a protest. In fact, though, I would argue the war for American independence was in itself a grand protest that just went to people taking up arms. So when people say that protesting doesn't solve anything, I find it ironic, because those same people are enjoying the very rights that were earned by protesting and boycotting and divestment. And the other thing too, it kind of goes back to the liberal attitudes, and I'm not talking about true progressives, I'm talking about the so-called liberal. There's a saying, someone put out a saying, and it stuck with me, you know, years ago. It says, scratch a liberal and a fascist bleeds. What we have here in many regards is, when people say don't do that, is that you're saying that you are okay not only with desecration and police terrorism, but if you were in power, not only would you continue those, you'd be seeking ways to expand fascism. And I want to be very clear here, you know, I may get some flack for this, but fascism is already here in Montgomery County, and it's come under the guise of a blue donkey instead of the red elephant, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. When it was particularly ironic, as you alluded to, with this safety initiative press conference where the county executive is talking about all of the various strategies that they're going to be using to keep Montgomery County, but specifically Silver Spring, safe. There is you know, there's a whole queue of police officers that are serving as the backdrop for the press conference. I mean, really, it was almost like, you know, having your own poster as they were queued up. And the one of the first things they talked about is this idea of recruiting for the police academy and et cetera. And I can't imagine that having police officers caught on tape, or maybe it is caught on tape, you know, handling a woman who is peaceably protesting would be a recruitment strategy. And so that was really disturbing for me. And I really want to hone in on this point for our listeners. You can certainly Google and look for the video footage, but it's quite disturbing that our police officers felt it necessary to actually put their hands on Dr. Coleman Adebayo. What are your thoughts about that? When you, and particularly as you're watching it in real time.
As I was watching it in real time, well, let's be very clear here. Like, policing is just the modern day slave patrols. And one of the things that policing has been designed to do is to patrol and control the Black body, especially when it comes to our Black women, you know, Black women and young Black men in particular. And so what we're seeing police here in Montgomery County do, you know, when they were like touching Marsha, even though Marsha was peacefully protesting, is just trying to patrol and control, despite the fact, willfully violating the First Amendment right to freedom of assembly and freedom of speech. I can almost guarantee that if Marsha was a Ku Kluxer or a neo-Nazi, they would be standing by doing absolutely nothing. But because, you know, here we are protesting, stopping the flooding and investigation to the developers flooding Moses Macedonia Cemetery, all of a sudden it's like they feel very, very emboldened to like go up and touch Marsha. Or if I can go back to an incident that happened last year at a budget meeting back in May, when Reverend Julianne spoke out against the desecration, all of a sudden she was surrounded, Reverend Dr. Julianne Robertson, she was surrounded by four police officers immediately. Oh, when all she said was, what are you going to do to stop the desecration? When are you going to return the bones so we can have them tested? And that should be really concerning, that if demanding the return of bones and demanding that flooding be stopped is cause for police surrounding you, then the quote an old blues song, if they came for me today, they'll come for you tomorrow, you know? So basically, people have got to start paying attention, you know, in terms of like, let's all band together now and demand not just an end to the desecration, which is definitely very, very important, but we also got to demand an investigation into every official that's been involved in this since the beginning. And so one of the things that we definitely got to be very keen for is that when you're touching someone, especially with police officers, you know, especially when someone is being peaceful and peacefully protesting, you know, basically, I see grounds for a potential lawsuit in a sense, like, because you could basically be charged with assault.
Yes. I would certainly, if I were Dr. Coleman, it would be something that I would be investigating. It was uncomfortable to watch, and I can only imagine what it felt like to experience. And when you talk about this idea of controlling the Black body, and if it had been a Ku Kluxer, or I would even say, as even without even going to that extreme, if that had been a white woman, I cannot imagine a scenario where the police officers felt like it was necessary to not only tell this person to be quiet and to tell them that they were being disruptive, but to actually put their hands on them to grab them and, you know, by the arm to try to force them out of the venue. I think that we in Montgomery County, particularly if we're going to be looking at this idea of recruitment and not to get off of the topic, but that was one of the strategies that the county exec put out as a way to make the city safer. We and as Black folks in this county, we need to understand what that means and the implications behind that, and particularly relative to the safety of the Black body. What are the plans for BACC in terms of next steps, and how is BACC continuing to address particularly the issue of flooding? I mean, they're so, like, I think every time I talk with someone from BACC, this issue gets more and more layered, more and more complicated, and I suspect that's for many different reasons. But what is the priority right now for BACC?
Well, that's tough. So the immediate priority is we want an end to the desecration and an investigation into the developers desecrating Moses Macedonia Cemetery. We also are demanding an immediate end to the flooding of part of most of parcels 175 and 177. We are also having our weekly rallies every Wednesday at 4 o'clock. So please, if you're available out there, please join us today. You know, we are going to be at 5204 River Road. Please join us, come out there. Let's show the power of community as well as keeping the community informed. We are also having several fundraisers going on. Like, you know, to help us raise materials such as flyers, pamphlets, and hosting webinars about the continued desecration of Moses Cemetery. So these are just a couple of things that we're doing in the short term. The long term is that we want to have a return of that land to BACC, which I want to just make very clear here, both the Circuit Court and the Maryland Court of Appeals have recognized as the primary descendant community. So we can have build a museum and memorial to not only honor those that have been buried in Moses Macedonia African Cemetery, but to tell the truth about what happened on River Road, as well as the resiliency of a community of the River Road Graysville community. But that's short term, and our long term plans.
Okay, and Robert, just also one last question: that video footage, is that on the BACC website?
It's not, it should be on the BACC website. It's definitely on our social medias, like our Twitter and Instagram. Okay. So if you follow us, our Twitter and IG handle is the same. It's at BETHAFR Cemetery. Again, that's at BETHAFR Cemetery. You can see it both on our Twitter and our IG. You can see the videos of Marsha being touched and basically surrounded by police, like a pack of wolves surround a deer. Basically, you can see that footage, and because my whole thing is seeing is believing, don't just take my word for it. Don't just take the audio of the video that was played earlier in the show, but watch and see for your own eyes. And then ask yourself the question, why are these police officers surrounding a woman who is not only practicing her First Amendment right, the free speech and the freedom of assembly, the right to protest, when all she's demanding is an end to the flooding, an end to the desecration, and that the powers that be do something? Ask yourself those questions. And if you find yourself siding with asking, well, why is she protesting, and why couldn't she call the county executives or these county officials, I would then want you to do another question. Did BACC already do those things? If the answer is yes, and the answer is yes, because we already tried doing all the things working within the system, then why are these county officials not budging? And if you still find yourself asking, why are you protesting like that? Then with all due respect, I would venture to say you're part of the problem, you're part of the problem, and you need to do some soul searching.
Robert, I couldn't have ask for a better conclusion to this interview. Absolutely. I think we so often believe that people have not tried to work within a system, even though the system does not work for us, that we just go rogue and those kinds of things. So I appreciate you saying that we, BACC, and I include myself as part of it, being part of the community, as that we have done the things that we have tried to work with the system, and when that fails, we have the right to go beyond that. So thank you very much, Robert, for joining us this morning. It's always a pleasure to interview you, my brother. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. I definitely appreciate you and everything that WPFW does in terms of helping us keep the word out about what's going on with BACC and Moses Macedonia African Cemetery.
Absolutely. Okay, and at this time, we are going to take a break. You're listening to What's at Stake on WPFW, and we will be right back after the break.
The best in live music entertainment is coming this spring to Bethesda Theater. Let's welcome music royalty, The Whispers, performing all their classic songs for two big shows on Friday, April 26th at 8:30 p.m. and again on Saturday, April 27th at 8 p.m. Also coming is Trouble Funk, featuring go-go legend Big Tony, celebrating his birthday by performing all their go-go classics on Friday, May 3rd at 9 p.m. And on Mother's Day, it's Howard Hewitt performing his own popular songs and those by Shalimar for two shows on Sunday, May 12th at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. The Whispers on April 26th and 27th, Trouble Funk featuring Big Tony on May 3rd, and Howard Hewitt on Mother's Day, May 12th. Get more information on all shows at BethesdaTheater.com. WPFW is a proud media partner with Bethesda Theater.
Welcome back. You're listening to What's at Stake on WPFW. And our next guest is guaranteed to engage us in an enthralling conversation. This morning, we are interviewing Chairman Omali Yeshitela. Chairman Omali, welcome. Chairman, you're muted. Chairman, you're muted. Thank you.
What I did to myself, what the FBI was intent on doing. Thank you so much. It's very good to be with you.
Thank you. As always, it is wonderful to see you. Wonderful to have you on WPFW. So
I wanted to, if I may, just
sure.
The discussion that you were just having about Moses Macedonia African Cemetery. And it's really the same discussion that you're about to have with me. It's the whole colonial question and the whole thing about erasing a community. The colonizer has to erase the colonized because our existence is an indictment of colonialism itself. So it has to make every effort to say that we don't exist. We can't exist. And because they create the law, but colonialism is illegitimate, regardless of the laws that they create. And to this thing that just happened with Dr. Adebayo, it's such an offense to the system indicts itself on a regular basis when it comes to us. And I was listening to the comments, and I don't know who it was. I had seen that video. I don't remember who it was that was upset because Dr. Adebayo was raising the question about the desecration of the graves. And she makes the point that I want to hear this other guy talk. I don't want to hear, about the desecration. And this is really a problem to be living in a situation where this kind of thing can happen. And there can be bystanders who make assumptions that this has nothing to do with them. Or if it does, they don't care. I don't care about desecration of African graves. I just want to hear what this guy has to say. And especially it happens during a discussion a press conference revolving around putting drones in our community. And somebody said, well, even the question was raised whether the drones are going to be armed, because they could be armed. But the presence of the drone, that itself is a major assault, to say that they destroy any assumption that there should be privacy in the African community, that our community is just there for them to do with as they will. So what we will do is assault even the notion of the right to privacy by sending drones, whether they've got missiles or can be armed with missiles or not. The camera is the weapon. The presence is the weapon. This overbearing, always under the microscope of white power, is the weapon. And I just think that what happens to us is so normal. The oppression is so normal that it's difficult oftentimes for people to get excited about it. And sometimes it's often difficult for us to get excited about it. We just live with it all the time. It's just the way things are. I just wanted to say that this whole erasure of community, erasure of history, we don't have history. I mean, this notion, as you know, I'm facing trial in September, September 3rd. I'm supposed to go to trial with two other members of our movement. And we are charged with with working for Russians. And we were working for Russians, the actions that constituted the crime that we charged with is, one, we ran candidates for office. We ran candidates for office demanding reparations. In fact, the first time reparations was ever put on the ballot was in this instance, where we ran candidates in 2017, 2019 for reparations. He said the Russians are responsible for that. We engaged in an UN tour in several cities throughout the United States. In fact, it was led by Frantz Fanon's daughter from the United Nations. And we were there with hundreds of African people who in the various cities where the tour went to. And we were collecting signatures, charging the United States with violating the UN Convention on Genocide as it related to African people. We collected 130,000 signatures, not just that time, but collectively. And the U.S. government charged us, this being one of the acts we did, traveling and getting those signatures. And the Russians are the ones who hired us to do that. I went to Moscow 2000, I think it was 15, twice. And to attend a conference of an NGO, non-governmental organization in Moscow, in Russia, that was there. Other countries, people from all around the world were there who were struggling for self-determination in this big conference. It was publicized. It was everybody was could see it. And that was one of the acts. They said the Russians paid us to do that. We had a press conference that spoke out about the United Nations, the United States attack on Russia using Ukraine as the vehicle to do it. That's killed so many Ukrainians, so many Russians, and even you know, contributes to possibility of nuclear conflagration that can destroy the whole planet Earth. And they said our intervention there. This all the Russians got us to do all of this. And of course, this is also a part of erasing our history, because anybody, you know, it's like the Russians have to teach us how to speak out against oppression. Then we're experts at being oppressed. We're experts at this. And, you know, who paid a bigger price just for the right to vote, just for the right to join Joe Biden's party, than Black people? Black people in this country paid the biggest. We have churches were bombed, our children killed, leaders of our community kill people, jail on a regular basis, and that they would erase that history by saying it's the Russians who are doing this and not African people, with our own agency, with our own interests, with our own concerns, etc. But the white man, somebody white, had to do it, because we are simply objects the interests of somebody else, and we don't have interests of our own. So that is extraordinary. And that I find this horrific thing because, you know, I don't have to tell you, but this whole burial ground thing is all over this country, all over yes. this country, everywhere, you know, parking lots, you know, over, you know, various sites and other kinds of offenses similar to what's happening with Macedonia there. And it's just what happens to the colonized. It's like we don't own our own capacity. It's been expropriated. Someone has taken our determination. There is no self-determination. It's determination by somebody else, some other force. That's colonialism, and we reject it. And that's exactly why the U.S. government has found it necessary to attack us. And we don't just say no. We negate colonialism by acting to engage in constructing the future of a free Black people. And that's the problem that they have. Yeah. So I was really struck and offended by this discussion about what was happening, you know, with yeah. Moses and you know, our dear sister, you know, Marsha. That, you know, that's such an offensive thing. Everybody should be offended by Uhuru.
Everyone, I agree, and thank you for connecting those dots, because I think that often when we are having these various discussions within our community, that sometimes we have difficulty connecting the dots. We sometimes have a difficult time understanding why this desecration here over at this cemetery, or why over here in this school where they are you know, putting more Black boys in detention, and then why the situation with this travesty with Chairman O'Malley and the Uhuru 3 is happening. So my question for you is, and really helping our community to understand, what would you say are themes that we need to be looking for that really connect these kinds of situations, so that we understand what we are looking at each and every time?
Yeah, thank you. I think that we have to really understand our place in human society and how we got here in order to be able to perceive a future for ourselves, because we can't continue to exist just protesting forever. You know, if you live in a situation that produces naturally and normally, you know, terror, oppression, you know, early deaths, you know, by curable diseases and things like that, it's at some juncture we have to say, you know, like, what's the basis of this thing, and so that we can attack the whole system, even as we protest, you know, the specific features of it. We have to say. And I think what is absolutely necessary to get to the source of it is the actual social system, a global social system that has come into existence through African enslavement. And when I say a global social system, I mean one that encompasses everybody on the planet Earth. And this system that we are confronting with at this moment, that we have to fight our way out of at this moment, that would create desecration of our graves, that would have us even buried in places such as Moses, Macedonia, as opposed to our own natural homeland, the thing that created was an assault that Portugal made 600 years ago on Africa. It attacked Africa, and it began dispersal of African people, forcing African people to work for nothing, take our genius, our science, and what have you, kidnap that, steal that, and then we disperse Africans all around the world against our will. We and the indigenous people of this land are the only people who did not come here looking for a better way of life, but lost a better way of life. And others won a better way of life. Just think about this. A better way of life was achieved by Americans through stealing indigenous land. What does that mean? What did that happen to the indigenous? They stole indigenous land and they got a better way of life. They stole men to work on indigenous land, and they got a better way of life. So their better way of life requires what has happened to Africans, indigenous people, and that's just the starting point of it, because we're dispersed all around the world. There would be no no such thing as Nicaragua, Cuba, Puerto Rico, all these other places, yeah, if it were not for the exportation, forcible exportation of Africa and Africans into all of these places. They stole our genius. They stole our labor. And then guess what? That has resulted in impoverishment, starvation in Africa. In Africa, and I think it's really important for us to remember that, because there's a group of people who run around saying that we want reparations, but just for Black people who were enslaved here. But the enslavement of African people did not start here. It started in Africa, where they first kidnapped us, and then that had a horrible, horrific impact on Africa itself. Artificial borders that didn't exist before, just as artificial borders in the Middle East that didn't exist before. There was no, even the concept of the Middle East was something that was born through the colonial project. So I think what's absolutely necessary is to recognize that there's a social system that's here that has to be, we have to make an assault on that. And this social system is based on colonialism. We look at what's happening to the people of Palestine, you're looking at colonialism. You see the same speeches, the same features. They want to talk about community erasure. Look at what's happening, what they call Gaza. Look at what happened in Palestine. Palestine, they want to disappear Palestine and create this concept, this entity, this artificial white nationalist settler state that they call Israel. So there's no longer Palestine. There's no, we call it occupied Palestine, every square inch of it from the river to the sea. You know, that's Palestine, just like from sea to shining sea on the territory we live in. That's indigenous land, indigenous territory, et cetera. So we got a common interest. Obviously, the interest is common when you look at Africans and Arabs and Palestinians and indigenous people and Mexicans, et cetera. But it's also we have a common interest with the white settlers population who can see, who have the ability to see that all of us are trapped into this. White women's oppression as a concept. We live in a situation where you have, that's defined by the primary contradiction is oppression of nations by nations. And that's not to say that there are not contradictions within the specific nations within which are there, but they say the primary contradiction, the thing that gives life to all of those contradictions, is the main contradiction, that is the oppression of nations by nations. White women are oppressed by this social system, not by Black people. Yes. And it's not Palestinians or Arabs or Louis Farrakhan or Kanye West that's responsible for what has happened to Jews. It was white people who did that. And white people, so why do Palestinians, Africans, and other people have to pay the price for that? You're misdirecting the contradiction. And the same thing happens. It's easy to happen like that. I've lived in a situation where you're sitting in a car and a white woman passes in front of your car while you're at the light and she clutches a purse or something to that effect, like something. I'm not the thief.
Right. You know what I'm saying? You've been victimized. But you made a point about this common interest. And I just wanted to just pivot just a little bit, because I think that's important to talk about, particularly as you and the Uhuru 3, as we track down getting closer to September. And what is, I want you to please talk about, Chairman O'Malley, what is the common interest for us as a community, as a country, to be watching this very closely, to be supporting you? What does that look like? What does that require of us?
Well, first of all, the United States government lied. We're not guilty of what they said we did.
Okay.
But our lawyers are absolutely correct when they said, even if we did what they said we did, it's no crime, because the First Amendment to the Constitution guarantees me the right, the freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and all of that. So the rights are there. But in order to attack those rights, they have to say that somehow the right to do those things is negated because I'm working for a foreign power. This is absolutely necessary for them, because the rights of First Amendment rights, the constitutional right, they were not written for Black people, weren't written for Mexicans, they weren't written for the indigenous, they was written for white people who were escaping despotism and tyranny of their own, monarchical domination, and so they came here to get some freedom. And they got freedom through taking land from indigenous people, enslaving African people, and then became tyrants themselves. But they still fought. When they got this freedom, they made constitutional rights prohibiting the kinds of things that kings and nobility were doing to them. They can't, you can't do that stuff anymore. First Amendment, freedom of speech, no longer the divine right of kings and what have you. People now have rights according to them. The problem was we weren't considered people until new struggles emerged in this country and made it difficult for them to be able to justify this relationship without conferring a nominal rights on the rest of us. So all of us now have rights. So now to take this right to free speech, they use me as the vehicle to do that, but they're attacking free speech that was not even made for me, which means that they're attacking white people through me. It's like they're attacking Russia through Ukraine. They're attacking white people through me. They're attacking in the sense that there's an assumption that there's enough popularity for this among the general white population that they can get away with it, this assault on white people. This is what people refer to as fascism. Now the colonial contradiction begins to creep into the social life or the life of white people, of the colonizers. This is the colonial contradiction that's coming there. It's you that they're coming for, even though they're using me as the vehicle to do it. And so you can be dumb enough if you want to say, because them niggas over there, I unite with doing anything you want to do to black people, anything you want to do with Arabs, anything you want to do with Mexicans, anything you want to do with the indigenous people. But those were not our rights. They were your rights, dummy. And so when they can get away with attacking me to do that, they're getting you too. So I think that's fundamentally important. Okay. And so what we've done is we've penetrated that. We've organized in behind enemy lines, as we like to say. We've created into the neighborhoods, the homes, communities, families of white people, colonizers, settlers themselves, and won them to unity with the struggle. There are 100, and we have organizations and 100 people who organize, people who are followers of us in the white community in 117 cities in this country right now, who fighting for reparations to black people, who fighting to expose genocide committed against black people, et cetera. And then who recognize, as Karl Marx once said, that wage slavery, as he characterized it in Europe, required as a pedestal slavery pure and simple in the New World. So the enslavement, if people want to get free, then they have to go through the colonial contradiction. You have to unite with the colonized people if you want to be free, because it is not black people who oppress white women. It's not black people who exploit white workers. It's not black people who exploit white homosexuals. It's the U.S. government. So unite with black power that's struggling to overturn all of it, and that's the way forward. Anyway, that's kind of sort of what it is that we say. So come to Tampa, Florida on September 3rd. And they say it's going to be a month-long trial, but there have been enough motions and things like that, and there's still some pending motions that the court has to rule on, and calling for dismissal of these charges. So if we do our work well, and people who are in this community right now that we are talking to and elsewhere do the work well, you know, perhaps the court can come to its senses and recognize it's better not to attack all the people trying to use us as the vehicle and just let these silly charges go.
Let these silly charges go. Yes. Chairman, one last thing. Please tell us how we can continue to provide support. I know that your organization was taking donations because we all know that legal expenses are astronomical, and we want to, as a WPFW family, our listeners, we want whomever is interested to be able to do that for you.
Thank you so very much.
For your organization. And not for just for you, but for us. This is us. So, yes.
Thank you. I think people should go to Hands Off Uhuru. That's U-H-U-R-U, handsoffuhuru.org. And for those of us who knew that at one time, the government has succeeded in making a fiscal sponsor retreat. So we were without a fiscal sponsor for about a month. So people, we couldn't accept donations. We can do it now. So that's handsoffuhuru.org. And we really appreciate people coming, and there are so many things that can be done, and we want you to participate. And this will give you an opportunity to do that. You know how to participate in every way. And we look forward to seeing everybody in September 3rd in Tampa, Florida. Let's fill the courtroom. Let's make it necessary for them to build a new courthouse if they plan to do this to us, right?
That's right. I hear you. Thank you so much, Chairman O'Malley. As always, it is an honor. I will see you in September. Uhuru, uhuru.
Uhuru, uhuru. Thank you.
Thank you. What's at stake, listeners? We have wrapped up another epic episode. Thank you to our guests, Robert Stubberfield of BACC and Chairman O'Malley Yeshitela of the African People's Socialist Party. Thanks to executive producer Ms. Verna Avery Brown. This program is engineered by Mr. Michael Nasella. I'm Denise Young. Thank you to Dr. Marsha Coleman Adebayo for the opportunity to host in her absence. We continue to salute whistleblowers. Again, thank you for joining What's at Stake. We appreciate you.
The best in live music entertainment is coming this spring to Bethesda Theater. Let's welcome music royalty, The Whispers, performing all their classic songs for two big shows on Friday, April 26th at 8:30 p.m. and again on Saturday, April 27th at 8 p.m. Also coming is Trouble Funk, featuring go-go legend Big Tony, celebrating his birthday by performing all their go-go classics on Friday, May 3rd at 9 p.m. And on Mother's Day, it's Howard Hewitt performing his own popular songs and those by Shalimar, for two shows on Sunday, May 12th at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. The Whispers on April 26th and 27th, Trouble Funk featuring Big Tony on May 3rd, and Howard Hewitt on Mother's Day, May 12th. Get more information on all shows at BethesdaTheater.com. WPFW is a proud media partner with Bethesda Theater.
If you remember Freestyle Union from back in the 90s in D.C., or if you ever heard jazz legend Steve Coleman playing with a virtuoso rapper, or if you've just been keeping up with what's going on in the DMV right now, then you know the artist that is Kokai. One of DC's most original talents, an author, improviser, storyteller, and 2023 Guggenheim Fellow, Kokai comes to Songbird Music House on April 28th for a special concert with his live band presented by Capital Bop. That's Sunday, April 28th at Songbird in Northeast DC. Also on the bill is Baltimore's Conjure Collective, a new group you won't want to miss. Info at capitalbop.com. That's CAPITALBOP.com.
Welcome to The Collision.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
Welcome to On the Margin with E. Ethelbert Miller. In the studio this morning is Mark Eisner, Meredith M. Taylor, Calvin Reed, Michonne Boston, Todd Stephen Burroughs, Shonda Buchanan.
Ethelbert Miller brings you On the Margin, Thursdays at 9 a.m., with personal, compelling interviews with local, national, and international authors of all backgrounds. To cite a few, screenplay writers, independent researchers, news editors, playwriters, poets, and contemporary novelists of nonfiction, fiction, comedy, historical biographies, and even graphic novels and comics. If you listen to What's Behind the Lines, you'll find yourself on the margin with Ethelbert Miller. Thursdays at 9 a.m. Catch the past episodes on our website, WPFWFM.org, and on iTunes and Google Play Music. On your station for jazz and justice, WPFW Washington.
WPFW is looking for a new place to hang our hats and microphones. And we're betting that members of WPFW's In the Know listening community, folks like you, may know of spaces where we might make our new home. Have you walked past or know of a cool space that appears to be for lease? Hip us to it. Know of something that's not yet on the market? We're all ears. Your station for jazz and justice requires 2,200 square feet of space in Washington, D.C. or immediate environs. Metro accessible with nearby parking. We value your suggestions and observations as we embark on this vital mission. Email your tips to wpfw.lsb.relocation@gmail.com. And thanks for all you do to nourish and sustain WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians.